24 hours that changed the world. This week we talk about the betrayal of Jesus Christ and what did that mean in his journey to the cross. That's this week's topic on the Tower Hill Podcast. Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast of Tower Hill Church, a church for all generations. This is Pastor Jason. Hope that you're doing great today. If you are listening in real time, it is snowing. It is nor'eastering, if that's a thing. And so, I mean, they're canceling school like crazy. We're canceling events that were supposed to happen tonight. Just want everyone to stay safe and stay home. And we are right in the middle of this sermon series called 24 Hours That Changed the World, as we look through the last 24 hours of Jesus' life and how that matters, what that was all about, what was the importance or significance or symbolism in the things that he did leading up to his death and then ultimately his resurrection. And this sermon series is carrying us all the way through Lent until Easter. And before we get into this week's installment, I just want to remind you about Easter, about Holy Week services. We do have some special worship opportunities for you coming up. Of course, Palm Sunday, we do have our regular worship times, March 25th, traditional at 9, contemporary at 10:30. We have kids choir, handbells, Tower Hill choir, all at 9 o'clock, with palms included at both services. Then that week, Monday, Thursday, we have a contemplative traditional service that we have every year at 7:30, where we have communion together, the Tower Hill Choir sings, and we end in silence, where we hammer nails into the cross. It's so powerful, and we want to make sure that gets on your calendar. Also, Good Friday, we do a community service with other churches in the area, and this year's service is from 12 noon to 1 o'clock. At the AME Zion Church on Shrewsbury Avenue in Red Bank. And yours truly will be one of the preachers that day. We're each doing 5 minutes on the last words of Jesus. My 5 minutes is going to be about his phrase, "I am thirsty." And then, of course, Easter Sunday, April 1st, which I don't know, I'm sure that there's a theological lesson that it's April Fool's Day, but Easter Sunday we have two traditional services and one contemporary service, and this is how it goes. 9 a.m. and 10:15 a.m. traditional, and then 11:30 contemporary. And we have childcare for infant through grade 5 for 10:15 and 11:30. No childcare at 9 a.m. And the traditional services are going to have choir and brass. It's going to be fantastic. It's always just a huge, huge day for us here at Tower Hill, and just want to make sure that you know all about it and you make your plans accordingly. All right, well, this week, as we are looking at this last 24 hours that changed the world, we're taking a look at Jesus's arrest and his trial, so-called, before the Sanhedrin, and what happened? What was so important? What was the big thing that caused them to sentence him to death? This is a key part of understanding who Jesus is and what he believed and why he was crucified in the first place. So I hope that you get a lot out of this week's episode. And here it is, 24 Hours That Changed the World.
I love those guys. It's really getting to the heart of what this sermon series is all about. It's all about, what does it really mean? What is this time of Jesus' life, these last 24 hours? What does it mean? What does it really mean as we get ready to celebrate the Easter season? As we drill down into this small window, but such an important window in the final hours of Jesus' life and, of course, his death and resurrection. And when we last left you on this journey, Pastor Julie was talking about the Garden of Gethsemane. And so we're about to leave the Garden of Gethsemane and to talk about really the story that seems to translate across generations and that people know about, even if they're not believers in Jesus Christ. And that is the story of Judas and his betrayal. You know, betrayal is a topic that I don't know if there's a bigger topic except for love in literature, in art, in film. Betrayal is one of the most favorite subjects because it's something that we all can relate. It's something that it stings so deep. And what's interesting about betrayal is that the reason it stings so deep is because it begins with love. You can't have betrayal unless you had love at first. So if somebody I don't know betrays me, that's not really betrayal. That's sort of like I didn't realize, you know, they were a jerk. But betrayal is somebody who you're not expecting to be double-crossed by. I remember my first kind of literature that I read that really talked about betrayal was in 10th grade. Julius Caesar, anybody? 10th grade. William Shakespeare. Yeah, was that 10th grade for you? It was 10th grade for me. How about, is there anybody like in high school? Have you read Julius Caesar? Thumbs up, thumbs down? Thumbs up. Yeah, I know. The pained look on their faces. But yes, and the famous line, of course, is, et tu, Brute. And you, Brutus. If you're having a hard time connecting with that, maybe equally important work would be Star Wars Revenge of the Sith. When Anakin Skywalker turns against Obi-Wan Kenobi. Et tu, Anakin. He doesn't say that, but it's betrayal. It's betrayal. It's such a big topic because betrayal stings. It hurts. And sometimes I wonder if we miss what Jesus was really going through, if we don't acknowledge the emotional pain that he was dealing with because of betrayal. Martin Luther put it this way. He said, each betrayal begins with trust. That's why it hurts. Of course, Jesus' betrayal. We mentioned a couple weeks ago that the Last Supper, Jesus has Judas sitting in the position of honor. He's somebody that he loves and he trusts. But I have to think, you know, even though Jesus knew it was coming, did it make it hurt any less? Or did it make it hurt more? It's like if something bad was going to happen to you tomorrow, would you want to know about it ahead of time or not? I don't know. Because the anxiety of worrying about that moment might be worse than just dealing with it when it comes. I feel like Jesus, knowing that he was about to be betrayed by somebody he trusted and loved, was a depth of emotional pain. On top of the spiritual pain as he was getting ready to take on the sin of the world. On top of the physical pain that he was about to endure on the cross. So Jesus, knowing that this was coming, now is about to be arrested and his betrayer at hand. Let's jump into our scripture today. Mark 14, verse 43. Just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs sent from the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with them. The one I kiss is the man. And isn't that just low, right? Just the sign of welcome and affection and trust and love. That's the sign, which has its own level of symbolism. The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard. Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, Rabbi, and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. First of all, I love that detail. Because it's like, that would be an odd thing for somebody to make up. Like that's and then in another gospel, we have Jesus healing the ear after, which is kind of cool. Puts the ear back on. Jesus says, am I leading a rebellion, said Jesus, that you have come out with swords and clubs to capture me? Every day I was with you teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me, but the scriptures must be fulfilled. Then everyone deserted him and fled. Let's camp out on this line. Do you remember just a couple hours earlier at the Last Supper, what does Jesus say? He says, you're going to betray me, and someone's going to betray me. And the disciples were so hurt that he said that. We would never betray you. made all sorts of promises to God. We would never do that to you, God. And just like hours later, they all deserted. I feel like I can identify with this. I don't know about you, but I identify with the promises I make to God and end up breaking, it seems, hours later. We all get pretty big on promises when things are going rough, right? God, help me out. I'm in a bad way. I need your help to get me through. And if, it's always an if then. If you'll do this for me, God. And we think about how ridiculous that is, but not in the moment. If you do this for me, I will do this. I will. You make these promises and we break them. What seemed unthinkable comes to pass. And usually that happens for me. I don't know about you. It's not always in the big things where I feel like I have fled and deserted Jesus. It's in the small things. It's like I'm going to pick up my kids at backdoor pickup, and I'm thinking to myself, let your light shine today. Find a way to talk, somehow weave in God or my involvement in the church or something. Not to make it weird, but just to talk about, just to get it out there. And then I'll go, and the reason I do that is because sometimes I'll feel like God's saying that to me, and I'm like, okay, better pay attention to that. And then I go to backdoor pickup, and all the parents are there, and I do end up getting in conversations, and I just like forget what I was gonna do. And then we collect the kids, they come running out, we collect the kids, you know, get them in the car, and start my way back, and I'm like, dang! I missed it, and I talked to like a whole bunch of people I don't usually talk to. I feel like my fleeing looks a lot more like that. It's much more subtle. And some of you can identify with that, or you're fleeing, you're abandoning Jesus is much more direct. Either way, I feel like we're meant to identify with these disciples who were real easy to like, we see the whole story. They didn't, right? So we're like, what's wrong with you, man? It's all going to work out. All right, verse 53. They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the teachers of the law came together. Peter followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest. There he sat with the guards and warmed himself at the fire. The chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they could put him to death, but they did not find any. Many testified falsely against him, but their statements did not agree. Then some stood up and gave this false testimony against him. We heard him say, I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days will build another, not made with hands. Yet even then their testimony did not agree. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, are you not going to answer? What is this testimony that these men are bringing against you? And so here's the moment. They're trying to catch Jesus so that they can find a reason to execute him. They want him out of the way. He's interrupting the power structure here. He's ruining everything. We worked so hard to be the people of power and position, and he's undermining it all. And people are following him, and he's creating crowds wherever he goes. We can't have this. This is chaotic. And so they have all these false charges against him. And Jesus hasn't spoken up yet about who he is. And the reason is a lot like the show Fixer Upper. Chip and Joanna Gaines. It's so sad that this is the last season, by the way. Gonna allow you just to cry a little bit. Chip and Joanna Gaines. So their show, Fixer Upper, you know how the show works. If you haven't seen the show, I'm going to tell you everything that happens. So you're just going to have to live with knowing you didn't see it firsthand, and you have to hear it from me. But the way that it works is they take this old, like, broken down house. They convince somebody to buy the old broken down house, and then they fix it up. And the house is always a nasty mess. There's always something about it. And 90% of the show is them working on the house. But we, the viewer, don't actually see how it's going. So the producers hide the details of what the new version looks like so that it can be revealed when it's time, right? Because they want the big moment, the big boom. And then you know how the show works, right? So they get the couple, whoever's buying the house, out on the street, and they have this, for the big reveal, they have the big canvas of the way the house used to look. Go to the next slide. Right, so they put the canvas in front, and it's hiding all the work that they've done, and they say the same thing every time. Y'all ready for your fixer-upper? Y'all ready to see it, y'all? I love that. And then, so then the canvas opens up, and they see, and it's like they are filled with joy. Boom, tears, jumping up and down. They can't believe it. It's so amazing. And they go into that house, and like each at every turn, they're just like, oh, this is the most wonderful thing that's ever happened in the universe. This is right. I mean, it's really over the top, but it's an amazing transformation. Everything in that show is about the big reveal. The house is revealed finally for what it really is, this beautiful transformation of a nasty mess. And strangely enough, this moment in the life of Jesus is like the big reveal where he pulls the curtain back on who he really is. All throughout Mark's gospel, he's been hiding the details of the reveal leading up to this. Some scholars have called it the divine secret, where Jesus instructs his followers not to tell anybody the things that he's doing or who he really is, because it's not time. He's still working on the house. It's not time for the big reveal. I'll give you just a couple examples. If you follow the rabbit trail in Mark's gospel, these are some things that you find. Mark 1:44, after Jesus heals a leper, he says, "See that you don't tell this to anyone." Mark 5:43, after raising a girl from the dead, he gave strict orders not to let anyone know about this. Mark 7:36, after healing a deaf mute, Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone. Mark 8:30, after Peter identifies him as the Messiah, Jesus warned them not to tell anyone about him. Mark 9:9, after the transfiguration, Jesus gave them orders not to tell anyone. Why? Well, because when he reveals who he says he is, well, it's too much for the people to handle. And he knew that as soon as he did that, that would be the end. He had to make sure that his disciples were ready as they could be, so that they could carry his message on even after he is gone. All right, let's watch their reaction and what he says. Back to verse 61. But Jesus remained silent and gave no answer. Again, the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" "I am," said Jesus. "And you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of the Mighty One and coming on the clouds of heaven." And there is the boom, the big reveal. When he says those words, he is saying something very, very particular. He's not just answering the question, "I am," you know, "Are you?" "I am." That would be bad enough. But he's saying it in such a way that it's meant to echo the words of God himself to Moses through the burning bush. Do you remember when Moses asked, "Who should I say is sending me?" And what was the answer from God? "I am." Tell them, "I am is sending you." That's God's name. "I am who I am." Which is so profound and amazing. God is always in the present with us because he's eternal. He's not bound by time. Before the world was, I am. Jesus is saying, "I am the I am." That's who he's claiming to be. And then he puts in that quote from Daniel 7 about the Son of Man coming in the clouds. It was the most dramatic reveal that you could ever do. "I am God," is what he said. Like, yeah, I'm going to double down. You're thinking I'm a troublemaker. Yeah, I am God. Now, of course, they flip out. Verse 63. The high priest tore his clothes, Why do we need any more witnesses? He asked. You have heard the blasphemy. What do you think? They all condemned him as worthy of death. I think this is a great point because for a lot of skeptics out there, they'll say things like, well, Jesus didn't actually claim to be God. That was something that came years later from his disciples. Not true. That was the charge for death. Remember, the other accusations weren't working. It was blasphemy was the reason he was charged to be put to death. Yes, he was charged to die because he claimed to be one and the same with the I Am. So, I mean, listen, you have to do what C.S. Lewis said. C.S., you know, I stand on the shoulders of a giant here when I say his idea was, if that's true, if Jesus claimed to be God, then there's only three options. Some of you know this. You've heard this before. Is that he is either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord. There's no other option. It doesn't make him a good teacher. You can't pick good teacher, good man. Because if he's a good man, a good teacher, why would he lie to you? Right? That's not a good man or a good teacher. Right? If he's a lunatic, I don't know if that's somebody that we need to emulate. Lord is really the only viable option. Because the even bigger reveal was when that tomb was empty. That was the biggest statement in human history. I am the I Am. And that's where this reveal lands in our everyday life. You see, we all are standing in front of the canvas waiting for the big reveal. And then we come to a part in our life where Jesus is, he's been working on us. He's been trying to get us to open our eyes. He's trying to show us that he could turn this nasty mess into a beautiful transformation. And then there comes a time in our life where it's like Jesus shows up in front of us. And it's like the canvas is pulled away. And we are just amazed. But yet there are some times when it's like, I've never seen anybody on Fixer Upper when the canvas is away, just close their eyes and be like, nah, I'm not really interested in this. Let's go find another house, honey. I don't even need to look inside. And yet that's what we do when Jesus is revealed to us. We have this amazing revelation and we're standing in front of this new life and we're like, nah.
Seems like kind of a hassle. I don't know. I don't know if I want this.
And we laugh, but you know, we all struggle with this. Everybody has at one time or another. I think the real part of this reveal that lands for us, this big revelation of Jesus, it has to do with the question, who is Jesus to you? You can know who he is, but who is he to you? Have you been watching all along? Your whole life, Jesus has been working on the house, getting you to open your eyes to see the shocking, beautiful truth that even though we all betray, he has made a way. Jesus was willing to die for us so that we can live. It's all about the reveal. I think that's the question for all of us. Are we going to live into this truth that we say Jesus is the way and the truth and the life? Or are you going to be like, maybe some other time? I never met anybody who started following Jesus and regretted it. Never. Not once. Did you hear that? Never. Everybody who went from not following Jesus to following Jesus didn't want to go back. That's my prayer for us today, that we all can walk out of these doors and say, you know who Jesus is to me? He's the I Am. And I'm going to live my life accordingly. It was 24 hours that changed the world. But has it changed yours?